You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The mistrust and misconceptions between police and the minority communities they serve run both ways. And that's why the Michigan State University Police Department is hosting a communication session that brings together community leaders and citizens with police from all over mid-Michigan. The idea? Examine prejudices held by communities against police and those held by police against members of minority communities. MSU Police Sergeant Florine McLaughlin-Taylor is organizing this dialogue and listening session. She is here with us now, along with Ken Pons. Ken is a minister who served as chaplain at Star Commonwealth's Albion campus for 40 years. He is a trainer in racial healing. And it's a pleasure to welcome both of you to Stateside.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
Sergeant, this year's event that MSUPD is hosting, it came out of a racial healing conference that you put on last year. What did you hear from people then that made you realize, you know what, we need more of this?
Well, one of the things dealt with evaluations that we received in terms of their comments, and individuals indicated that they wish they had had more time to talk more about this. And in particular, they were very interested in the history of policing and also the historical aspect of race and discrimination and how it came about.
Give us an idea who will be coming to this session.
Anyone in terms of its faculty, staff. We may have some graduate students attending. There's community members. There's individuals from religious organizations. So it's an open event for the public. We have several police agencies that are taking part. Last year, we had the Lansing Police Department, Bath Township, Meridian Township, East Lansing, but they were all local agencies, including Michigan State Police. And all of those have been invited back this year as well.
Ken, that term racial healing, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it means that one of the things that we're exposed to is the works of a man by the name of Nathan Rutstein, who has passed on, but he viewed racism as a disease, and his whole approach was that if racism is a disease that we're all infected with, then there's a way of curing it. So racial healing is a way of approaching that. If we're infected with the disease, then the cure is us beginning to understand that we're all connected, that there's a oneness of humankind, so to speak, and if we acknowledge that we're all part of one family, then that helps us down the road in terms of racial healing.
Sergeant Taylor, as you work as a police officer, how do you think the public misunderstands officers?
I think any time the public comes into contact with the police, especially on a traffic stop, the assumption many times is that they've done something wrong, when in fact it could be just to warn them, to let them know, for instance, that it could be an equipment failure, but something to keep them safe. So there are those types of misunderstandings. And most of our contacts, traffic stops, that's generally the issue. So what we've been doing as well is we've been training our officers in terms of non-escalation, where we try to lower the tension when coming into contact with the public, meaning that if we make a traffic stop stating who we are, the reason why we stopped you, and just indicating, again, that reason up front, not asking, do you know why we stopped you? And that tends to lower the tension immediately.
And Ken Pons, what's the flip side of that? What are the misconceptions that you find that officers have about people in minority communities?
Well, I think throughout the history of our country, there's been a criminalization of people of color, particularly men of color. And I think that's something that many police officers, that's their operating position, is that this person is potentially dangerous. And so go into a mode of confrontation instead of a mode of let's see what's going on here. Is there a better way we can approach this? Is the way we can de-escalate the situation without it becoming confrontational? And I think that's part of what the struggle is when you hear about some of the things that happen between police and members of the minority community.
Certainly, with the advent of cell phone cameras and, you know, able to shoot video, that has certainly come into the spotlight in our nation. But there really is, you're going to be talking about the history of policing in our country that really contributes to institutional racism and tensions. Can you give us a little sense of what you're going to share about this history?
Well, one of the things we're going to share is just about how policing came about in the United States. There's two roads, if you will, that it took. One was more out of from the north in terms of as policing developed. It was used as a way to, you know, kind of keep people in check, if you will, to bust up unions, to contain riots that would occur occasionally between people. And then out of the south, policing came out of the slave patrols. And so those kind of paths kind of merged at some point in time. And basically what has happened is that police find themselves in a position of having to maintain a system which keeps people in check, whether it's, let's say, people who are involved in unions, let's say, for example, or people of color who the system has labeled as being criminal, and these folks have to be controlled. So I think in many ways the police find themselves as gatekeepers, if you will, of a system that they are being asked to help keep in place.
I'd like to say that a lot of times when officers or an individual is stopped by an officer, many times individuals of color feel that that is the reason why they're stopped. So the perception is it wasn't necessarily because there was something that they did wrong, or it was something that they did wrong, but mainly because they were a person of color. And so that's what we're trying to dispel and have conversations about in terms of this workshop.
And as a woman of color who is a devoted police officer, how do you personally process that history?
Well, one of the reasons why I became a police officer was because I felt that there weren't enough, women of color in law enforcement. And being a female, being a black female, I think it's important to be here. To work with individuals and be a part of that history. But a lot of it was interesting to me as well in terms of processing it. A lot of the information that was shared at the workshop last year was new to me, just like it was to some of the other individuals there.
Ken, what are some of the ways that you can help both of these groups do a better job of understanding each other? I mean, to take that very first step of admitting, okay, maybe I need to make some changes in the way I'm thinking about them.
Well, that's a very good question. One of the things that Sergeant Taylor and I really worked on was just this whole idea of let's have a conversation. And with the understanding that the purpose of the conversation is not necessarily to convince people of their position, of each other's position, but it's to have a conversation about, we don't have to agree, but let's at least listen to each other. And as we listen to each other, then hopefully people begin to really hear or get at the feelings behind people's statements. And once you get at those feelings, then that takes you to a different level. And you're more open to at least becoming curious as to why people respond the way they respond. Why do police officers do what they do? Why does the community sometimes respond the way it does to police officers? If you get curious about that, then that opens up a pathway to not only connecting with the person, but hopefully to understanding where they're coming from.
Sergeant Taylor, can the session that you're going to be doing April 24th be used as a template for other regions of Michigan?
Definitely. I think we need to have more of these conversations, and I think the more often police and the community come together, the better the understanding will be, and a lot of the misconceptions and bringing about better understanding as to why we do the types of things we do. And I think it would be beneficial and can be used as a template.
This is to both of you, and I'll start with you, Ken Pons. How will you measure success of this day of communication?
Well, I would measure it success if people really obviously are conversing with one another, but not just conversing, but are people listening to each other? Are they allowing people to say what's on their minds or in their hearts? Are they allowing people to speak that? Are they really being open to the feelings behind what people are saying? And to me, that would be successful. But for me as a facilitator, you're always looking for that light bulb, if you will, that you can see that goes on within people when they really are beginning to hear what the other person's saying.
What about you, Sergeant Taylor? What's success to you?
I think Ken summed it up very well, but I think just from having this session last year and people indicating that they wanted to continue that conversation shows me that not only was it successful last year, but this is a good thing that we're doing again this year.
Ken Pons, minister and facilitator in racial healing, who has worked with youth at Star Commonwealth's Albion campus. He's now founded a business called One Day, and its mission is to promote racial equity. And Florine McLaughlin-Taylor, a sergeant with the Michigan State University Police Department. I want to thank both of you very much for sharing this mission with us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you.